I'm here to tell you that we can hope for change, but not until we change our hopes, and to wish you a happy 4th of July from my favorite show, The Backseat Producers.
My friends, in memory of our founding fathers who I knew personally, and all of the young men and women who have sacrificed for our country, let's celebrate this fine holiday.
From The Backseat Producers,
to all of our friends,
have a safe holiday.
And God bless America.
I hope that you can create change for a quarter.
Well, my friend, let me see if my trusty abacus can figure out how many meals it takes to make a quarter.
Backseat Producers, Episode 67, Blade Runner.
Hey, this is Tony.
This is Tony.
This is Adam.
This is John.
And this is Arvin.
And this is Dan.
We've got a full crew tonight because we're here to talk about Blade Runner.
We have a person representing each of the six cuts over the past 20 years.
I like to be the European special extended cut without the Shining cutting at the end, but with the massive 80s tush push.
I'll be the work rent.
Tush push. The work rent.
I'm Ridley Scott's private version with all Sean Young all the time.
All Sean Young shoulder pads, day in and day out. I can hardly contain myself. You know, she and Harrison Ford did not get along at all. And none of them got along with Ridley Scott.
Yeah.
Supposedly it was hell on the set.
And the film crew really hated
Yeah.
Because that was like they were doing a strike or something around
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
There was a whole bunch of tension and pressure. Mm.
The only thing that brought that crew and cast together was their hatred of Ridley Scott, apparently. And somebody got, like, screw Ridley Scott t-shirts printed, and they all wore them. And for a day, they were in total solidarity.
Something like, he said something like he's like, well, at home, because he's British, he's like, at home, I said something to the effect of, he expects the crew to say something to the effect of, you know, what's next, Governor? It's just kind of a...
Get closer to one or the other of the mics.
It's just kind of like a phrase that, well, I guess because of the already very intense situation on the set, then they all wore these shirts that were to the effect something of, like, screw you, Governor.
Okay, that was it.
Something
then.
Governor.
Right, yeah.
And basically, I don't think he cared all that much. According to the 8-hour documentary that's included
yeah.
the new briefcase version of Blade Runner.
Yeah, I wouldn't really get my pussy bruised too easily either if I was Ridley Scott. I'd just say, hey, I have aliens and Blade Runner and all this other crap. That was James Cameron. Was he the first one?
Alien.
Yeah.
Before
we get really too far into actually talking about the movie, we're going to spoil it. So if you haven't seen it,
yeah.
stop listening to us.
This is like,
and go watch the movie.
Spoiling Citizen Kane at this point. It's 30 years later, and it's at the absolute height of nerd canon. Rosebud is the sled. Go watch the movie, come back and listen to us.
Rosebud is the sled, Wash dies.
Yeah, man. Soylent Green is people. You can't bring back Eris.
Plus, Blade Runner has such an ambiguous ending.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah,
we could tell you, and you'd still be gone.
If I could tell you 100% whether Deckard's a replicant, and he is, then we would settle a very long debate. Yeah. No, I think the addition of the fact that Gaff knows what he's dreaming about is pretty significant. But
what's with the paper goose?
That's it. No, the paper chicken when Harrison Ford backs down and will work for O'Brien means that he's a chicken. Like, he was going to leave, but then Brian threatened him very vaguely, and he decided to stay. And the guy with the boner is Harrison Ford falling for Sean Young, as we all do.
As we all do.
Wait, how do you know it's a goose and not a chicken? Or a chicken and not a goose?
It's a chicken, dude. Look at it. Geese are way more slender than that thing. It's just on little chicken feet and has big chicken feathers.
This is the kind of controversy that Blade Runner has spawned yeah. for some 20 years.
Is it a goose? Is it a chicken? Replicant or not? Is it a replicant
goose? Chicken origami metaphor.
I gotta put something on the table, guys.
Whether Deckard's a replicant or not.
So, I watched it on Monday. In all of the Indiana Jones movies, when Harrison Ford was young, he wasn't wearing a hat.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, this is right. This is the first movie he did right after Raiders. He's sitting down, he's talking to the chief police dude who's hired him to do whatever, and there's a scene where he turns and looks at him, and I paused it, and I'm like, holy crap, that is Shia LaBeouf.
No.
The resemblance is uncanny.
That's...
I hate to tell you this, but Harrison Ford was in Blade Runner, my friend.
Yeah, I realize that.
LaBeouf.
I'm just saying that
Shia LaBeouf wasn't even probably alive.
Was well, probably like 3 years out of
they
being
did,
born.
They did a good job casting Shia LaBeouf,
yes,
is what
they
he's
did.
Saying.
Yes, that's what I'm saying.
I know, I'm just messing with you, too.
I hate you guys.
It was the final cut that you were watching, and George Lucas helped out. Not too many people know this. And he actually put Shia LaBeouf in the movie. And he's just a ghost,
it's
and he's only at the end during the celebration.
What do you say if you're producing a movie and George Lucas says he wants to help out? That's got to be nerve-wracking.
Just say no. Kids, step away from the editing
I
room.
I would say, okay, George, I have beneath you. One question for you. Can I use all your Star Wars IP? When he says no, you say thank you, but that's all I wanted.
See, the problem now is if you use Skywalker sound, he gets access to everything. You don't even recognize your film when it comes out.
Is ILM independent, or does Lucas totally still own that?
Oh, he totally still owns that.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure that dude has the Iron Vice grip on all of his IP.
Greatest businessman, probably in the history
and yet,
of film.
Doesn't give a shit when you go anywhere with it. He hasn't read a single Star Wars book.
He doesn't have to. He's
well, yeah,
it just furthers his yeah. medium. Because he's smart. I think he's smart about knowing that, you know, having fan fiction is just
marketing.
Yeah, it's completely free. You know, who cares?
Less than free.
And
pay him.
Yeah.
And see, I think I'm one of the, like, four people in the world who read the Willow novels.
Wow.
The Chris Claremont.
That's pretty bad.
Willow novels that were actually after the fact.
Well, George Lucas was one, and Val Kilmer. So there's one other guy out there. Well, you, and then there's
me, and then that one other guy. Yeah.
And then Warwick Davis, the Hobbit.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah, the Willow. You want to read a very well edited, trimmed up, and altered version of the Willow novels? I got this book called The Lord of the Rings. It's way better.
Well, the
how can there be six people around the table and then there's awkward pauses like that?
Yeah.
They're not my fault.
When I know most of the people at the table here absolutely adore the movie.
Because we're not talking about the movie.
Yeah, not to mention, we've hardly mentioned Blade Runner yet. Just for those of you tuning in, this is the Blade Runner podcast.
All right,
and we
Blade
will
Runner
eventually get to
my
it.
Top three movies.
And we haven't spoiled anything yet, even though we warned you we would.
Deckard's a replicant.
Someone give a synopsis of the movie.
All the other replicants die.
And we don't know if it's a chicken or a goose.
I'm getting his ass kicked synopsis,
until everyone gets killed
shot.
By someone
Go
else.
Go for it.
Basically, the film opens with a man interviewing another individual doing some kind of test, which is called a void comp test. And we learn from that opening sequence that he detects something wrong with this gentleman based on a series of questions. Emotionally provoking questions. Excellent point. And so he shoots him, and that kind of sets up...
The interviewee shoots the interviewer.
Exactly.
Which makes us realize that the interviewee is a robot, or whatever he's looking for,
the
which
replicant.
Is robot.
Precisely.
Yeah.
Then we cut to Deckard, a detective, who's called to do one last job for the Blade Runner Force, and he's...
the special secret police force designed
right.
to okay. assassinate okay. the robots.
I don't know if
no, the
Tyrell
police
or,
are independent.
Yeah.
They don't flush out how much of the stereotypical near future libertarian corporate takeover has happened in the Blade Runner universe, but it's safe to assume a fair bit.
And then we get to the point where he gets a dossier on the
remaining
four outstanding replicants, but there's also a fifth. They mentioned six, which is an interesting topic that we can talk about.
Yeah, I think they actually got
did they edit
got
it out
Brian
in the final
to say
cut?
Five in the final cut.
Yeah. Really?
In the
Wait
final
a minute.
Cut, they fixed the problem.
I thought the reason
the ambiguity really? Was that Brian was thinking that Deckard himself was a replicant.
That's
which,
what I thought.
Yeah, that's what the fan community said. But
wait a minute.
I think Scott said no, that was just a.
He says six, but later he says, but two of them were
right.
Fried
yeah.
through an electrical.
Yeah,
field.
That's,
yeah.
That's added and re-edited.
Okay.
Because in the original cut, it says only one of them was messed up in the bank heist that went
wrong. Gotcha.
Well, no, they tried to just rush the Terrell Corporation office and get to Terrell that way, but they,
yeah,
a couple
yeah,
of them got killed.
So then we, basically, the plot ends up being Deckard hunting down these other replicants that have escaped the Softworld colony on our Earth for unknown reasons, which I think probably their reasons vary depending on the replicant. They're all related to emotion, and they're all related to the quality of life. And
they all wanted to know
slaves,
and they wanted to know their incept date and when they would retire.
Yeah,
mm-hmm. How long do they have to live? The movie's about immortality.
Following the Rutger Hauer one, and it was his quest to find Terrell.
Yeah,
find out how much he has left. Get forgiveness from him, maybe, or maybe kill him. He winds up killing him. We don't know.
He wants more life.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, which is father, by the way, in the captions.
Yes. And in the final cut, and at the first TV edit, I think.
Ridley Scott told him to intentionally do it both ways, to be interpreted
really?
Either way.
That's awesome.
No, they have two different cuts, dude. They have one where he clearly says father and one where he clearly says father.
According to IMDb, Ridley Scott tells him to pronounce it in a way that it can be interpreted either way.
The great thing about this movie is that as old as McCain is, there is a cut for every year that John McCain has been alive. So no matter what you think about the movie, there's a cut to support whatever theory you have.
I like the blood gushing out of Terrell's eyeballs that they put back in the final cut. It wasn't cheesy. It wasn't even gory as such. It was just shocking.
Yes, it was.
That's one thing about Ridley Scott. When everybody else was sort of glorifying violence at the time, Blade Runner never glorifies it.
No.
Every time one of them die, it's horrible and it's sad and somebody mourns it. And the movie is about death. I mean, and can we forestall our own death? And it's really like deep, crazy stuff that they were selling to a bunch of kids watching sci-fi movies.
And I think the other element of that is it's much more in vogue now to talk about what constitutes life, but back then I don't know how widely that question was being asked, particularly about genetic engineering, which at the time was a fiction only. Now that it's a reality, you know, it's a lot different.
And at that point, it was more fiction projecting. I mean, a lot of science fiction is very forward thinking because they actually were using.
Agreed.
Fiction. I mean, they were using science that you can tell where most science is headed, and you can say, okay, 15, 20, 30, 50 years from now, we know that it will advance this far. We have a presumption that we'll advance this far. You know, 50 years from now, bioengineering is going to make this level of leaps.
But I guess the thing about Blade Runner that I think is interesting is that it asks all the right questions. You know. Like, there are questions asked in The Matrix that may not ever matter.
Can Keanu Reeves act?
We'll talk about that in a couple weeks.
Well, but I'm just saying, like,
the question of how intelligent do we make
the
machine
Matrix.
Before
Keanu Reeves.
Enslaving it becomes immoral is
right.
always on the line. I mean, nobody's going to say, well, the robotic arm at the car factory, that's terrible. But if you make a human that is indistinguishable from a real person...
Are they really alive?
And you tell it to go in a suicide squad or on a mining mission until it dies...
Right.
Is that moral? Probably not.
And is it okay if they only live 4 years?
No.
Right. Does that them not make them human anymore?
Right. I mean, all great questions. You know, so...
And do you care if Sean Young is a replicant when she's that hot?
No,
that's a good question.
If the replicants are completely biologically indistinguishable from humans, Sean Young has got all the parts.
All right, we're back. We had a little technical malfunction there, so
that's okay.
And we're playing with the suitcase. That's okay. It's not your problem because you're both not editing and not listening.
It's almost as if we're on a podcast at which no actual temporary delay of our recording will have any effect on the final product.
It's like time travel, which makes Adam happy, which is the only reason he's accepting of the fact that he's going to have to edit that mess out.
If it was a time travel romance, we'd be golden.
See, I thought
look at all you people, I don't want any romance.
I thought it was the same origami figure throughout the whole movie.
No.
There's
several different
One of them is a matchstick man, isn't it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, one of them is the guy with the erection that signals off the red flag. He seriously does. Look at it.
I returned the movie, but...
Thank you.
There's screenshots.
Okay, yeah, so what we're doing here is we're playing with the suitcase. I own the Blade Runner Ultimate Collection suitcase. So we were playing with some of the toys within.
There's a origami unicorn in there,
and
the
spinner
made by Edward James Olmos.
Yes,
commander of the Galactica, now admiral of the Galactica.
Every time.
Speaking of that movie, speaking of that TV show,
behind the wheel, I was like, oh my god, his next command is the Galactica.
You know how many references there are between
Skin Jobs.
There's Skin Jobs.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford, Deckard is the fifth Cylon.
That'd be awesome.
That would be awesome.
No, we are the fifth Cylon. The whole rest of humanity is the perfect Cylon.
That's what I always
mark
said.
Mark it down.
I said that
you
a
said
year
that?
Ago. A year ago.
Really? I'm good.
I just hope they do the final episode in Esperanto so that we don't even know who the final Cylon is until someone can translate it on the internet.
Before the end. Said that, and they said that they were going to kill the president before the end of the season.
I'm shocked the president made it to Earth. I thought they were going with the whole Moses thing, where she gets some nine-tenths away.
By the way, we are spoiling Battlestar Galactica at the moment. If you haven't seen it, they do, in fact, find Earth.
Man,
well, we think they find Earth.
Here we are.
Okay, they find a planet.
They find a planet that has been civilized at one point.
Constellations of Earth with recognizably intelligent building ruins, but there's no continent outlines, so who knows?
Could be cheap special effects. My wife Colleen actually loves Battlestar Galactica. It is tough for her to tear herself away from it. In fact,
it'll be easy for her
grounds for divorce if I watch it without her. And it's been very difficult because we don't have cable at the moment, and we watch it on Hulu. Yeah. So sometimes I can watch it, and she's not available.
Huddled around the monitor.
You know, you can watch it. You can tell her you didn't watch it, and then watch it again with her. That's sneaky.
I do.
But for Battlestar Galactica, you do that?
I have done that.
Your wife, Colleen, must be incredibly irritated.
As the kiss of death right there.
Well, she's okay with it because there are times where she doesn't understand science fiction as much. You know, she hardly watched it till she married me.
Yeah, but you know
and
your wife, Colleen, listens to this show, right?
Sure. And
well, at least she's going to listen to this episode.
Well, yes. And
she listens
one of the
to
issues,
show, then I'd have to say what you did is wrong, Dan.
Well,
your wife, Colleen, would not appreciate that.
Here's how my wife, Colleen, is okay with that. And that is that she will let me watch it so that I can provide commentary when she watches it.
Oh, okay.
And to me, it's like, that's a win-win for everybody.
So you're translating the science fiction aspect of it to your wife, Colleen.
Yes.
I have a question for you, though, because your wife, Colleen, is a phenomenal cook.
Absolutely.
Why don't we have goodies?
We did that episode 2 weeks ago.
Not Goonies.
Sorry,
yeah.
I apologize.
Yeah, unfortunately, I didn't ask. And
okay.
If I had asked my wife, Colleen, you would have goodies. All
right.
And no one would be talking because we'd all be stuffed full of food. Could happen any moment. But
this
is the Blade Runner podcast, and my wife, Colleen, did, in fact, watch Blade Runner with me, so we can talk about how
the
my
final
wife,
cut?
Colleen, likes it. The final cut.
What did your wife, Colleen, think of that?
She thought it was a bit slow.
It is a bit slow.
It is a bit slow, I'll give her that.
That it was beautiful.
Compared to the other
and
cuts.
And was one of... She's only seen the one.
I think in general.
I think it would take more charisma than I've ever had to convince her to watch more than one cut of Blade Runner, not being a science fiction fan.
You mean there's different versions of this that people watch?
So a little caffeine and promises.
Boy, if she thought
she was willing to watch.
Yeah, if your wife Colleen thought that was a little slow, you probably never want to show her the original Russian cut of Solaris.
She won't watch Solaris
I don't even
at
know
all.
What that is.
Wow. Even the George Clooney.
That one's actually more bearable to watch than.
Yeah, I mean, in comparison, that one is like a car chase.
Oh yeah,
it's but Yeah. No.
And they're really, there's really nothing cut out of it.
She also story-wise.
Actually, if she said away from the entire thing, that's a bonus. Because Melina fell asleep 15, 20 minutes in.
Of which one? The George Clooney one or the Russian?
Solaris
one?
Or Blade Runner?
Oh, Blade Runner. Yeah, she did actually stay awake. Yeah, but it was the middle of the day. And
15 minutes in, I've fallen asleep during Blade Runner before. It's a very
Yeah, but you use it as a lullaby.
No, I
agree
with
that. The music in there is beautiful.
And the scene
is beautiful and soothing.
Dark, and they will make you fall asleep.
Not a lot of movement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, my sound system at home, I don't think you could sleep through anything if it has a soundtrack. And the subwoofer alone in Blade Runner will keep you awake.
I haven't watched it on my new system with a subwoofer yet.
Oh, you're in for a treat.
You know, I think it's a fair consensus that we're all in love with this movie.
Yes.
Yes.
I do think it is the Shawshank of sci-fi movies.
I think that the Shawshank is the Blade Runner of regular movies.
I don't think Blade Runner has anything to do with Shawshank.
I think Shawshank is the greatest movie ever made.
Really?
Yeah.
So in that case, do you think Blade Runner is the greatest movie ever made?
No, I think Blade Runner is the greatest sci-fi movie.
Of sci-fi, right. Okay, I didn't understand the connection.
I would have to say Blade Runner is the Blade Runner of sci-fi movies. Does that blow your mind?
Yeah, I'm blown over here.
Okay, so any flaws in the movie? Because, I mean, we can gush about how great all the various parts
are. White Dove is make six versions of it. That's the flaw.
Well,
I think that's a studio issue.
No, but fair point that, you know, well, okay, sure. The studio did...
In part, it's a studio problem. In part, it's a problem of the technical limitations of special effects at the time.
Even aside
not,
from that...
Not only that, but what they necessarily wanted to do with the story.
Yeah. The creatives and the marketers got into a fight, and neither side got all they wanted.
Gee, because that never happens.
But it doesn't always happen as bad as it did.
Even with Lord of the Rings re-releases, do you think there's going to be?
Ridley Scott approved the... according to the making of that's in the... Ridley Scott approved the voiceover. He had no problem with it. You know, he said, if that's what we have to do to make the film work, we'll do it. You know?
But they didn't have to do it, and it took a poop on the film.
Well, but I'm
Ford
saying that was a
he tried to dog it so bad they wouldn't do it. And
and Ford knew the ending too.
That's a rumor that he denies, but you know it's true.
It's true.
But I guess the point I was making was it wasn't like Ridley Scott said no and they took the film out of his hands.
Right.
He made a director's choice.
Well,
and the film suffered as a result.
He made a concession.
Well, they told him that they wouldn't release the film without the voiceover on it, and so it was like. No one will ever see Blade Runner.
But that's not how he characterizes it. Now, maybe he's glossing it over now because he's got friends in high places.
Well, and that's also because Ridley Scott didn't pay for the special edition. The studio did.
Okay.
So he can't get on there.
I thought the Blade Runner partnership was...
Well, sure, he has a part in it, but he still can't go on there and say, yeah, the studio did
you're
this
not gonna hear
that. It'll never make it to the cut.
Yeah, you're never going to hear all the negatives for anything like this in the commentary that's wrapped up in the film.
Well, it's probably true.
Now, if Ridley Scott released a book about the Blade Runner experience...
But he seemed like so adamant in the thing. He's like, it was never true that I didn't...
Six different cuts
of
the book.
Six different cuts of the same book. No, but according to the... Like, he seemed very adamant. Like, he's like, no, I approved it. He's like, all these rumors that... It was taken out of my hands. He's like, that was not true.
Well, I mean, depending on how you spin it. I mean, I haven't watched it, so I don't know his exact wording. But you can spin anything and still be completely honest and completely upright and forthright about it. And
it does add a certain film noir feel that's lacking in the Redux.
And if he
doesn't
justify
how crappy it is, or
and yeah, I mean,
the story.
Maybe it was the wrong.
If he was so adamant that the narration was perfect and was absolutely what made the movie the first time around, why would it have been cut
from
every successive cut after that?
According to him in the making of...
It didn't need it?
Well, that was one thing. He said, basically he was like, the audience, he agreed with the studio at the time that it was, the audience would not be able to understand what was going on, so they put, now wait, I want to make sure I'm saying this after having watched it, I think, twice.
Right.
This making of. So I might not be totally right, but basically...
No, I've heard that too. The synopsis plot is a little hard to follow.
He believed, he thought it was beautiful, but he didn't think, like, the studio asked him to do the narration or whatever, and he said, okay, it's hard to follow, we'll do it. 12 years later, they do the director's cut. The work print had come out in 1990 and had gotten big reviews in California. It was shown at the Chinese Theater, I think, or something. And audiences by that time had become a bit more sophisticated. I think T2 was out at that time. And it was more of a cutting-edge science fiction
when was
film
this?
At the time. 92.
Okay.
So the director's cut came out.
Yeah, that would have been...
And so, apparently, Ridley, they called him up. He didn't even oversee the director's cut. The studio did. They called him up and said, what would you have done? He said, well, the first thing I would do is I'd put the unicorn back in because that's what I wanted in the film. It's very important, etc. So they put the unicorn in. Then they learn that his original cut didn't have narration, so they pulled the narration. It's my understanding.
And
that he didn't personally oversee anything in the director's cut except that he said, put the unicorn scene back in.
What they also did was cut out the ending. The last 30 seconds of the theatrical cut of the movie were just abominable. They destroy the whole point of the entire story to that point.
Right, which also goes with Ridley's personal original cut that the studios knew existed, but, you know, had changed or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's kind of...
Yeah, because the theatrical ending was shot without Ridley Scott. Yeah.
Right.
And that
they
is
didn't even shoot it. They took stock footage of northern snowy hills from The Shining and said, and then we ran away and Rachel just lived anyway.
Well, there's a little bit of them in the car. And they shot that without Ridley,
right?
And then used the stock footage
and
from The Shining.
Like, I don't know how long she has to live. Who does?
But who does?
And then they fade in the end credit sequence. The sound.
Oh, seriously?
It's
pretty weak, man.
I'm glad I don't remember that.
And yet, I know people. Well, even in that making of, the director of Pan's Labyrinth says that's Blade Runner for me. He's like, that's. To me, it's the greatest movie ever, and the original cut. And I have a cousin who's 40-something, who's a huge Blade Runner fan, can recite the whole movie. But, you know, I own the director's cut, and I'd never seen the theatrical cut until this re-release.
Right.
And he's known the theatrical cut his whole life. And he's just telling me, he's like, these other cuts, they just don't stand up to the original. I don't care, you know. And
it's
and
all, you know, it's nostalgia, and once people put it into the frame of nostalgia, it's really hard to get past that.
Yeah,
but the desperation and the mortality that they convey in their movie, to just tack on the end that, oh no, they live. Come on.
Yeah, it's like what they did to Brazil. If you've seen Brazil in the end, it's suddenly the man's being tortured to death, and then all of a sudden it's a shiny, happy ending. And it's like, wait a minute. It's the same thing in Blade Runner. She's about to die. They're on the run. There's people hunting them. Oh, no, it's fine. We have a vacation home in the mountains. You know, it's... Who thought of that as a great idea? And I'm sure they showed it to a test audience, and they went, don't they live happily ever after? Sure they do. Okay, here we go. What I like, though, is where did they live happily ever after? In the hotel from The Shining.
Yeah.
Exactly.
In room 217 or whatever it was with Tub Girl.
Well, I think this whole conversation just demonstrates how the film, over time, has aged well. How the world is caught up with the film, the original film.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Or the way it was intended.
Right.
You know, and now the final cut is the best representation of that.
Yeah, I'm not a film student or anything like that. I'm just a consumer. And here we are saying that the
original. But as a member of the audience,
you
demand that... That version of the film won out over the original theatrical version because people, over time,
there was still a want for more out of it.
Yeah.
Well, I think one of the things we should clarify is when we actually saw Blade Runner first and what version you saw, because I think it makes a big difference.
Yeah, sure.
And I'll start with that. And I saw Blade Runner in the theater, and I was a teenager.
What did you think of it immediately?
I thought it was spectacular, but I was a weird kid. I mean, I was like a little kid that went to see 2001, and afterwards my dad was like, are you okay? And it's like, yeah. And he's like, what was that? And I spent like 2.5 hours explaining to my father what 2001 A Space Odyssey was about. And then he was like, wanted to get me help. I think Blade Runner was much the same thing.
And a lot of people came out of 2001 wanting help.
I love 2001.
I do too.
Oh, I love it too, but it's a lot.
It's brilliant, is what it is. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I think a lot of Blade Runner was Ridley Scott trying to do a Kubrick film. It really has a lot to do with that same kind of feel to it and the look of it and what was going on with it. The other thing that was weird about Blade Runner for me was it was probably the first movie I saw by myself where I didn't take anyone, and no one took me, and I just enjoyed the movie. And I didn't have to justify it to anyone, and I came out of it, and it was
you know,
all
it's
mine.
Funny you say that, because the final cut re-release in theaters was also the first movie I've gone to completely by myself.
Really?
Yeah. I never...
Where did you see it in the theater?
The Tivoli. Oh, the Tivoli
that,
re-released
that
it
sense.
Last fall, just for like 2 weeks. Really late
I
night shows.
That.
Yeah, no, I learned
I
of
knew
it
and
the
I
last
go.
Day was out, and I had LSAT class that night, and I couldn't miss it, so I had to go really late, and I got out of it at the end, one of five people in the theater, all alone, dumping out onto the loop. It's raining. It's 1 o'clock. The neon signs are up. There's nobody there. It was the perfect
so like
afterword. Yeah, it was Blade Runner walking back to my car. It was better than the movie.
That's awesome.
So did anybody else see the theatrical version in the theater?
No.
Not in the theater.
Yeah, we're not old enough. I saw the...
yes, I'm ancient.
The director's cut.
The one at the Tivoli, was that the original theatrical?
No, that was the new final cut that was just re-released for a very, very limited theatrical re-release last fall.
Yeah,
before it came out in the suitcase. It did not get into the Weinbergs and the AMCs and that stuff.
No. No, it was an art house. It was an art house release.
Yeah.
That's because they didn't know Shia LaBeouf was in it.
That's right.
In which case, they would have put it on the IMAX at Ronnie's.
I mean, Jesus, come on. They were advertising for Crystal Skull a year ago when they released this. But
there you go. Easter egg.
I saw it on cable. HBO, Showtime,
really?
Cinemax, something like that. So it would have probably been, I can't remember specifically, I would have probably been about 13 or 14 years old. So it would have probably been...
So was it even letterboxed?
80, oh no, it would have been...
So you're watching Pan and Scan Blade Runner on TV is the
yep.
first time?
Yep.
Oh man.
And it was... and
that's like the
it
first
was amazing.
Time you're having sex with a, you know, tequila-ridden, chain-smoking hooker. Wow.
But it was still
meaning
great.
Really good or really bad.
That would be bad.
It depends on if you were in Tijuana.
Depends on what kind of
you know,
she smokes.
You know, at the time, it was great. Looking back on it, it was not the ideal situation. So your metaphor stands.
Well, you didn't know any better.
Exactly. Exactly. And it was like nothing I'd ever seen before. I knew it was... I wanted to see it because Han Solo and Indiana Jones was in it. And I really had no other framework for it other than it was, you know, it was Harrison Ford. And I really knew nothing else what it was about going into it.
See, I had just read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? And I thought, this is the movie version.
No, it's not.
And it was the first time that I went, I had to separate, wait a minute, this isn't the book anymore.
There.
And once I got over that, truthfully, I was a little disappointed for a little bit because it wasn't the book that I enjoyed. And then I went, but this is cool. And then it was okay.
Mm-hmm.
But I just am a little sad for you, Tony. I'm having a moment. Did you watch Blade Runner on cable and Pan and Scan the first time?
That was the only way I could have.
Yeah, but it's sad.
All things considered, that was the way it had to be done. Because there was no letterbox formatting of anything. Any media that could be consumed on television, you couldn't get a letterbox VHS tape.
Right.
You couldn't. I mean, you could
if
you were
a Laserdisc player. You weren't watching anything Pan and Scan.
Everything was Pan and Scan, or Pan and Scan is actually worse than them just cutting the sides off, which happened a lot.
Understand what they're saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, you children.
Pan and Scan rhymes, and that's cool.
Their mouths are moving, noises are coming out, but I don't get it.
We should have a technical discussion about this.
Pan and Scan and Letterbox are those black bars at the top and the bottom. for when TVs were square.
Like if I watch a widescreen movie on this, it's boxed out. That's letterboxed.
Well, because we were talking about PanaScan, which was their
methods for dealing with letterbox.
So they would cut a third of the movie off.
No, there's full screen and then there's PanaScan. They're actually two different formats.
So letterbox is widescreen.
You can watch.
There's three different formats.
Some DVD players have PanaScan format. Seriously? Watching. Sure.
Yeah.
I've got one.
That's horrible. PanaScan is absolutely horrible. Because what they do is, I mean, most of the a decent director will have two people speaking, and they're at the edges of the screen.
Right.
A full screen, they'll just cut off half of each of their heads. Pan and scan, if this person's talking, it'll pan over to that person. If the person on the, that's the person on the right side, if the person on the left side, it'll pan over to that. And it's obvious and painful.
I don't want to hear
the worst example of it.
So it's kind of cinematographically selective.
And it's horrible.
But from the director's point of view.
No, it's not the director's point of view. It's
some asshole on a VHS reformatting team.
Yeah.
Right, so it has no...
And there's no rhyme or reason for it. And it's not done subtly.
Yeah, it's center whoever is talking. That's how it's done. So whoever is speaking gets centered on the screen. And the worst example of it that I've ever seen is in Back to the Future, when old Biff and young Biff are talking to each other, and in the widescreen edition, they're at either ends of the screen.
You are so right.
Full screen, there are two noses talking to each other, and in pan and scan, it's like a drunk on a ship. It's just drifting back
and
forth.
I have the DVD version, but I remember taping it off television.
Yeah.
I remember what it looked like, man.
Don't you have a safe? Between that and the quality of our recording, it was the worst movie ever.
Oh my gosh. Is that Biff's head? Or is that the car?
No, I'm really sad that Biff didn't make it in a wide variety of roles. He's a great asshole bit character. He was good in Wing Commander 4 and Back to the Future, and that was about it.
Yeah, does the man even work now? I mean,
he has a YouTube video or two up of him singing like his fake Back to the Future songs on his guitar. It's good. He's like,
what?
No, I'm not going to leave a message as Biff on your phone. No, stop asking me about Michael J. Fox.
It
just goes on and on and on. It's great.
So he's old and bitter.
He's middle-aged, too old now. And
is
at least
he
a good
flying
one.
What was he like?
I haven't seen one of those in
Damn,
40
what the
years.
Christopher Lloyd?
No.
Crispin Glover?
Crispin Glover, there we
yeah.
go.
Who was born
Glover
crazy
been,
and only got worse.
Been
oh,
doing,
man.
Been doing his fair share of strange appearances in films. He showed up in The Doors. And
try again.
Dead Man.
Try again.
And some movie
he did
about
a,
some guys obsessed with rats or something.
Didn't he do a
I
vampire
think
movie?
I can,
Vampire's
yeah,
Kiss.
Objection.
Was that him?
Which one?
Vampire's Kiss.
No.
No.
That's Nicolas Cage. I don't think Crispin Glover's in that.
You're right. It is Nick Cage. That's a
when
weird
I watched
freaking
Back
movie
to the
too.
Future 2, I thought there's no way Doc is actually going to live to 2015. This is stupid. And now we're pulling in on 2015, and Christopher Lloyd is still alive. So I'm really interested to see if he makes it.
I'm rooting for you, Christopher Lloyd.
Me too.
Say that.
I want to see you in more crazy
Though
stuff.
Though with the rash of demises lately, man, it's like nobody's safe.
Jeez. You know Bo Diddley? And we're going to talk about Blade Runner soon, I promise. But Bo Diddley had been playing violin for like 10 years, apparently, and he was becoming a virtuoso, and he was getting ready to release an all-violin album.
Really?
The Blues Legend? Yes. That is a fact. I hope they release it.
That would be awesome.
I will purchase it. It'd be great.
So you heard it here first. The violin killed Bo Diddley. So kids, put down the violin before it's too
late. Incredible news source. Who knew?
Between Edward and the stuff we make up, it's great.
Yeah, I would edit out credible if I were you. News source, possibly.
Oh,
I didn't say
of,
credible. I said great.
Yeah, we should.
No, Adam said credible.
That's true.
We should probably advertise the next thing that we're doing.
Which next thing we're doing?
I don't know, but I have to pee so bad. I don't even care what you guys talk about.
Okay.
Yo, I don't care.
You go. All right.
All right. Everyone give their final thoughts on Blade Runner. All right. Adam's not here. Okay, your turn.
So the next couple of episodes that we're doing, the next episode that we're going to do is The Reckoning.
Okay.
And that's not a movie. Well, if it is, we're not doing it based on a movie.
It's the gauntlet.
Basically, what has happened is Phil, a a friend and fellow podcaster, has thrown down the gauntlet in trying to reclaim the honor that Tony 2 and Adam lost during the 80s movie.
I have no honor, so I had nothing
you
to lose.
You had nothing to lose?
Go ahead.
In the 80s geek movie podcast that we did, where I rattled off a list of films and they both went, I don't know, I never saw it. So Phil has challenged me to a movie trivia contest. The next episode will be that contest. We're not sure exactly how this is going to work out yet, but it should be entertaining if
it
nothing
seems
else.
Difficult to me to conduct or even arbitrate a contest like that, because it would be so easy to pitch a question that Adam could get and Phil would have no chance about, and vice versa. You'd almost have to get a stranger to do it.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how we're going to do that. The list of questions is coming from other sources. By the time this episode is released, we will have already recorded it. So if you're listening to this for the first time, don't bother sending in questions. But the contestants for it are going to be myself and Phil. And
well, to be fair, how I'm getting the questions is I'm soliciting audience participation.
Right.
Okay.
Because I know Tony and Phil too well to ask
questions.
Yeah,
that was just a
control between the two of you. So,
yeah.
Like, all the questions I haven't generated a single question.
And have you been getting questions other than Edward?
No.
Okay.
My dad said he'd give me some, though.
All right.
I would offer, but I have the same problem you do.
So, Armin, you can throw some questions together and send them to Adam.
You should do that.
Questions about movies?
Yeah.
Random questions.
Just random questions, yep.
Is it a goose or a chicken in Blade Runner?
Chicken.
Don't give me the answer.
Question.
It's a question.
It is a question, yeah.
Of Blade Runner and its legacy.
Actually, during goose the episode, we danced towards... We talked about a movie from which one of the questions was, and I was going to toss it out as trivia, and I'm like, oh, damn it.
So then after that, this episode that you're listening to now is episode 67. The episode, The Reckoning, is episode number 68. For episode number 69, exactly.
Porno.
We're doing Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure in memory of George Carlin, God Rufus.
Did you see that news article where they were like, Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure actor dies? And I was like, oh,
no, I did not see that.
That is your, you go with that as your headline?
Wow.
George Carlin, the man who was the first face on Saturday Night Live, and his legacy is he was in Keanu Reeves movie.
I've done that before.
I mean,
pissed
that
off
is
a
just
black
terrible.
Kid in high school because he brought up Danny Glover, and I was like, oh yeah, Danny Glover was in Angels in the Outfield. And he was like,
wow.
Dude! It was a race riot almost happened.
I'm surprised George Carlin didn't come back from the dead just to say, what?
No, that's okay. I did my LJ tribute to him, and it was, F George Carlin. All you people pissing and moaning about how he's gone, you know what? That was exactly the kind of thing that he didn't want.
It's true.
I'm sure he's standing up there screaming, how did you not hear me?
I think if there's any sort of conventionally accepted afterlife, he's not the good part.
No, probably not, but I'm fine with that.
I don't know.
He did a whole bunch of...
I think he is. I think he is.
I think
he is because he was honest.
I don't think we can make that judgment at all, but
I think
hey,
we're very qualified.
He played a nice guy in Jersey Girl.
Anthony, we are.
He played
a
great guy.
Podcast that's kind of credibility, you know, allows us to do pretty much anything we want.
I don't have to say, for the most part, you're right.
But George Carlin is the hitchhiker in the Kevin Smith movie. Now that was
yes.
George Carlin,
where he teaches you about the rule of the road.
Well, yeah,
there's only one rule of the road.
Just saying all the stuff that. Everything he did was an act. I mean, I don't know how much of it... I mean, I know obviously his personality's involved, but I don't know what he was like in real life or whatever. I mean, I know what his comedy was like.
Mm-hmm. I don't want to know what he was like in real life.
Exactly.
The people who knew him pretty much said, you get George all the time.
Cool.
That's him. That if you brought him to your house and talked to him, you'd be getting a stand-up
routine. This is part one of the George Carlin tribute.
You know, I can obviously
continued in episode 69.
And where is he in which Blade Runner cut is George Carlin
I think
in?
That's I think that's cut number 12.
Cut number 12.
I can offer some very reassuring news for those who listen to this podcast, seeing as I'm a guest on the show this evening. That is that the amount of information that we cover in such a short period of time would just make one a movie genius by the end of a year. I mean, it's really impressive.
It is very true.
Because, like,
And what's even more impressive is the amount of alcohol consumed in this episode alone.
I'm on record pace tonight. I'm not going to lie.
Hey, I even finished a bottle tonight.
Is that your third?
It is.
I've been finished my third.
Yeah. Just for my wife who is listening, I'm drinking tea.
And he's Colleen?
My wife Colleen.
Oh, okay.
And I want to reassure you, it's green tea in his diet, so I'm not even having sugar.
And Colleen, it's only the first one. He hasn't got a second one yet.
Actually, I had one in the car.
Oh, well.
It looks like it's got salt on the rim. I always call that green tea myself.
Thanks, Anthony. Now I can't go home.
She can spill the tea on your breath.
Oh, man, that was good.
There's nothing worse than salty tea on a man's breath when he comes home late at night.
Tea dick.
And on this podcast, that has completely different connotation.
Yeah. Or to Andrew's Dream of Electric Sheep. What an author. What a movie. Let's talk.
You kids who are watching, are listening, I hope you've all gone to bed now.
Dick.
Podcast?
No.
Yeah. Philip Dick wrote Blade Runner, Daddy.
Yes, I am aware of that. Okay. I've read the book.
Oh, cool.
The new one is in tribute to him.
I've tried.
Hmm?
The new one is in tribute to him.
I didn't notice that.
It's in the credits.
I have a weird fact about Blade Runner. Did you know that the smoke was so thick during the movie that it made, like, all the actors, like, literally sick?
Really? The cigarette smoke?
Yeah.
Because they were so all bad. Doing it the whole time?
Like, they encouraged smoking.
Not only that, but the fog machines on the set and everything.
Oh, yeah,
the whole atmosphere of it.
Yeah, I know from, like, my personal opinion, I own a fog machine during Halloween, I get sick with it.
Mm.
And I end up getting sick with it, you know? It's just that bad. It's really fascinating, you know?
I'll tell you what I think was cool that I found out from the making of thing was that the best line, personally for me in the movie, Rutger Hauer's final lines... He wrote that.
Time to die.
That blew my mind.
Yeah.
Really?
I thought it was part of the script, but Ridley Scott was like, look, he's got to say something. Rutger Hauer's like, all right, give me 25 minutes or whatever he says. He comes back with it, and
the funny thing is,
like, that's great.
It's established half of the Blade Runner universe canon that we've extrapolated from it. We know there's attack ships. We know there's gateways.
It's like
we don't know that from anything else in the movie.
It's just his lines there at the end.
Yeah, and it's so great because not only does it...
And it really does round out the whole universe.
Yeah, and it does the thing that all really good hard sci-fi does. It just references stuff like it's just normal. Like attack ships on fire. And then he's like... he's saying all those moments will be lost in time like tears and rain. It's like the most poetic line in the movie.
Yeah.
And
when it's pouring and then they go back to Deckard and just like, is he crying?
Yeah. And it was Rutger Hauer. That blew my mind.
Yeah, Harrison Ford was crying because he's like, I didn't get any lines like that.
It's like, who wrote this? How would you know it's genius. Crying?
Well,
exactly,
and I hate that face that he gives at the end, like, because it looks like I'm baffled, but at the same time, I'm just like so beat up and
I'm
tired. I don't give a crap. You know, he's like this.
Yeah, he does look kind of bored.
Arvin's making a face very much like the Harrison Ford face in Blade Runner right now.
Yes,
narrating.
My favorite line is, "It's too bad she won't live," but then again, who does? I think that's the point of the movie.
It's because Eddie Olmos is there with that ridiculous. Face hair.
Hey, that is his new Caprica mustache.
My favorite scene is where Daryl Hannah jumps on Harrison Ford.
I like that one too.
And tries to crack his neck.
Yeah.
That is the best scene in the movie.
Vaginas are always serious.
Vaginas are always serious.
If there's anything Dr. Lucas taught
us.
And some of the noises she makes.
She shrieks, man. They're scary.
She was hot back in the day.
Oh, dude, 80s Daryl
Until she made those noises, and it was like, God.
Like, the 80s hairstyle was Daryl Hannah's best look. Yeah. It, like, worked for her so well.
Was that?
Like, those big
curls. It's the Linda Hamilton effect.
Like,
hot in the 80s.
Talk about, that's a kind of a good way to go, how that movie really kind of influenced 80s style in a lot of ways. This is my understanding that it did. The new wave punk stuff came from that movie in a lot of ways. I mean, there was punk before that movie, but that
and
movie
there was some serious
like,
freak show fashion there, too.
Well, yeah.
That movie kind of pushed it into, like, uber punk or cyberpunk or whatever it is that they call that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, cyberpunk, the literary form, really came out of Blade Runner.
Yeah.
If you read William Gibson, the man went and watched Blade Runner and went, that's cool, I'll do that. You know, and he wrote his own sort of thing about it. And it came all out of Blade Runner, not to mention a whole ton of commercials, a Duran Duran video.
Did Gibson not start producing until after Blade Runner?
Pardon me?
Did Gibson not start producing until after Blade Runner? I thought, Neuromancer and stuff was out of the 70s.
I think Neuromancer was later than Blade Runner.
Really?
I could be wrong.
No, we need to look it up, Neuromancer.
But what came from it, though, I mean, cyberpunk really came into its own after Blade Runner.
Yeah, that's
and Philip K. Dick had already done it.
That, but yeah, you're right.
And they were like, it's new.
Yeah, my classic AI and man story is Moon's a Harsh Mistress.
That's a good story.
Way better than Neuromancer, in my opinion.
Well, it's a different kind of thing.
It is a different kind of thing. But
I mean, Heinlein and Gibson, not the same.
Yeah, Heinlein's entertaining.
They do things with the trope of the suddenly sentient AI.
Wait, we're back to the fanboy smackdown. It's Gibson versus Heinlein. Heinlein's got more naked people in it.
Fanboy smackdown.
Heinlein has more cloning yourself going back
never
in time and having
ever
sex
die.
With
win in my book.
Absolutely.
Time travel romance.
Time travel romance with female clone of your own body. Oh, yeah.
Time travel lesbian romance. Come on.
But Gibson actually made people that work on the internet cool. And for those of us who do that on a daily basis,
that's
it
true.
Was like, yeah. And then we go in every day and just hit keys all day. It's like, no, when do we have to plug it into our brain?
I work in a basement. The only way I had natural light today was when I lit the candle on my desk. That was the
natural
light.
Was it Humphrey's?
I have made fire.
That is correct. With my extended torch clicker. Click.
Awesome.
And by doing it, you were also taking all the last natural air out of the room by burning.
Hey.
So you can have you natural have to, light or to, natural air.
You have to cover up the aroma of working in a basement.
That's a good
with
point.
Internet professionals.
Yes. who at one point in time were allowed to bring animals into the building.
No.
Yes.
That's not good.
So you basically said Blade Runner's the best science fiction movie you've ever seen.
You talking to me?
I'm talking to you, Adam.
All right.
I'm pointing at you.
Yeah.
The audience can't see this because we're an audio-only podcast.
You're not actually pointing at me either.
You're just kind of referencing in a vague
it doesn't
direction.
Pointing in this direction
anyway,
because I agree.
But you were basically saying it was the Shawshank.
Yeah.
Of sci-fi movies. Does everybody feel that way?
No.
No.
Really?
Mm-mm.
I have a hard time understanding the reference to Shawshank to.
Just fill in the best
reference.
Movie ever.
Okay,
it's
Citizen
Kane.
Right. For the explanation.
The way he says it just kind of perturbs me a little bit.
It's
it should.
It doesn't
I'm not that
sense.
Finger in an uncomfortable place. I'm here to disturb.
You know, it's like a splinter in your mind driving you mad.
That's right.
But
Morpheus.
It's like my soul that lives in a fishbowl.
I don't know that one.
That's like
no?
a. I don't know.
You kids need to read. Get some books in here right now. No more movies.
What is it?
No.
There's actually a really great short story.
Oh, okay.
My soul lives
my
in a fishbowl. A guy has a just terrible phlegm attack in the morning and coughs up his soul, and he doesn't know what to do with it. So he puts it in a fishbowl. And people come by, and they're like, what's that in the bowl? That's my soul. And you know it's got to look like a hunk of phlegm, you know? And it's just cool stuff.
So, yes.
Shawshank.
So, yes.
You
asked me
so, Tony, you are seem
so
to be
Tony
the only one
agrees.
That's standing up and saying
this
that
is the
Blade
kind of
Runner
I want.
Is not the best sci-fi out there. What
not
is?
For me.
What is?
So what would you pick?
Are we talking hard sci-fi or
anything.
Entertaining sci-fi?
I have put the challenges Blade Runner versus whatever you can throw in.
2001.
How do you guys
choose right. both?
2001 counts.
2001
That's
the best.
Definitely sci-fi.
I would actually say that I don't think Blade Runner is sci-fi. I think it's science fiction. It is the closest thing to a science fiction.
It's fucking science fiction.
Well, sci-fi.
Oh, let's not start
cutting
culture. That line.
It's a popular culture.
It's SF.
Version of,
sci-fi definitely has a nostalgic kind of feel to the word.
And there's a little kitschiness to it.
Right.
And I don't think
no.
Blade Runner has any of that.
No, I don't quite I'm not slicing that line.
Okay.
2001 isn't exactly kitsch either. I mean, even if we're slicing
no.
it that way.
No, and it's not sci-fi category. Either. It would definitely fall in my science fiction bucket.
Like hard sci-fi is what we're really talking about.
I mean, Transformers looking at sci-fi.
Looking at hard science fiction, Transformers is fantasy.
Yeah.
Star Wars is fantasy. Star Trek is fantasy.
Yes.
But for the sake of the Blade cast...
We're gonna put
all of.
Damn it! I
gotta
go register that domain.
We're gonna go from Transformers all the way down to one of the most hardcore sci-fi movies that exists since 20th century.
As a reference point to discuss it.
A reference point to discuss it. Right.
Sure.
2001 is better, but this is leaning more toward the hard sci-fi. I think when you get to the more popcorn kind of sci-fi movies.
Well, it's all on
it's
the
block, completely. I have to draw a line there because it's different, and you're going to lose a lot of people with the hard sci-fi. There are a lot of people who consider themselves fans of science fiction movies who look at 2001. It's like, oh my god, it's so boring, and that's fine. And I can see some of that. I can see Blade Runner lending itself to that mentality.
That's okay. When they remake 2001 next year,
they'll
be including
is that really
the cars.
Happening?
No,
2001.
They're gonna wait till 2000.
Odyssey into 8 years ago.
They're gonna remake 2010.
Oh man.
Well, considering they're remaking though the day the Earth stood still, which you didn't ask, but that's my favorite science fiction movie. I think that is the tip top. It never gets any better than
that's
that.
That's my ex-fiance's dad's favorite science fiction movie. That's how I ended up watching it.
It's brilliant.
It's his favorite movie, period. He loves it.
It's an amazing movie. There's hardly any special effects in it. And it's about ideas. And then, of course, they're going to remake it. And what great thinker and actor did they get? Keanu Reeves.
No way.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be horrible. I can't stand that guy.
Yeah, I'm not going to go see that.
The only movie he was ever good in.
I'm sure
the Tilly's
going to play the original the day it comes out, and I'll just go to that instead.
The only movie he was ever good in.
Anti-Keanu Reeves.
Because he's horrible. He can't act. He went to the Bill Shatner School of Acting. He was the first graduate.
If you write a movie for him, he does well. If you actually put him in a movie written for an actor, you're doomed.
I'll tell you one thing that I think he does well.
Pardon me?
Like Val Kilmer?
Val Kilmer would be the same way.
I think the one thing that I think is interesting about Keanu Reeves is he's smart about the projects he chooses. He definitely chooses a certain type of project.
Like Speed.
Well, that was a huge...
Hey, he was smart enough to not do Speed 2.
That's true. But I mean, like, he pretty much stays with the sci-fi action, sometimes the reality-shifting kind of
Point
sci-fi
Break
genre. Where all he has to do is look around and go, what's going on? I don't know.
I look confused. And
he plays mentally disabled really well.
Though I will say one
that's
movie
the
that
cool thing about him.
He's not
just a dude.
One thing that surprised me.
He's just a dude in most movies.
But he also played Buddha. If you watch Little Buddha.
I've seen Little Buddha.
They do this whole flashback to the life of Buddha.
What's
again,
Buddha?
Here's this
it's
part.
Bad, Little Buddha.
Little
Dalai Lama dies or something, and then the monks come to America and they're trying to figure out which kid is the new Dalai Lama, but it's actually all. So, spoilers, Little Buddha.
And so, wait, Keanu Reeves' so acting is like, what? I'm the Little Buddha?
Well, no, he's the old Buddha. He's Buddha, the actual man that the religion is based on.
Oh, really?
They're teaching the kid about Buddha, and they flash back to Buddha. And again, what meeting were they all sitting in? And they went, who are we going to get to play Buddha? I'm thinking Keanu Reeves.
Ryu just rolled over in his bed. What the hell is going on?
I mean, I am surprised that there weren't Buddhists out front with signs saying, you know, it's the last temptation of Christ for Buddhism. Because it was just, you know, you just had to get over the fact that Keanu Reeves
is
playing
Buddha. Tranquil and serene people. I think they could chalk that up to the disappointment of life and move on.
Well, not to mention they thought, no one's going to see this movie. What do we care? We protest, they'll show up. And then everyone will know that Keanu Reeves is Buddha.
That's why Kevin Smith protested his movies.
Right, because he knew then people would...
Dogma is dog shit.
That's what Blade Runner needed was some people to
some
protest
Some
protesting?
It.
I mean,
some clones
I was not
to come
some
out.
Some replicant rights advocates.
The situation when it came out, and it's my understanding that it was pretty much generally unappreciated and faded fast from the theaters, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, the didn't do well at all.
Yeah, I saw it in the theater the weekend it opened, and when I said I saw it alone, I didn't just mean I didn't bring anybody.
Oh, I didn't know.
Nobody else came. I sat in a theater entirely by myself and had a private screening of Blade Runner.
On opening weekend?
Yeah.
That's I always wanted that. I mean, I almost got away with it one time because there was one other person.
It's happened to me twice. That and Army of Darkness. And I went to see it, and it was thunder snowing outside. And everybody in the movie theater was like packing up to go home. And I'm like, I got a ticket. And they had to show the movie to me. And so I sat and watched the movie. And I had four-wheel drive. I'm driving home. I don't care. You're showing me.
Thunder snowing, all you nonsense of awesome. Natives.
What's thunder snowing?
Thunder snow is like a thunderstorm, but it's snowing. And like you'll get 3 to 5 inches in an hour.
Is that precipitously possible?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It happens here.
How long have you lived in St. Louis?
It just happened this past winter.
I think my whole life.
Wow.
You really gotta look out the window.
You know what's funny is it didn't snow here for like 5 straight years. And then we went to Nashville for 2 years, and those were the 2 years it started just coming down. And then of course the last 2 years have been crazy too.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, but I didn't think it would ever snow in St. Louis again. Then I got back and everyone was like, oh,
well yeah, because of global warming.
Yeah, of course. Of course. All that ice, Earth's getting warmer. Ice is growing. That makes perfect sense.
Ice is growing.
Well, since you brought up the weather, let's talk about the weather in Blade Runner.
Good call.
I mean, one of the cool things about it...
It's always raining.
It's always raining.
It's an environmental film.
Yeah.
The original screenplay writer, I think his name is Hampton Fancher, wanted to take on the project because he wanted to talk about the environment. He wanted to talk about how the weather would be, and how
technology would affect the weather.
Yeah, and how, and all the pollution and everything, and how.
And how Los Angeles was going to hell?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at the time, LA was first beginning to suffer in the 80s from acid rain and that kind of thing.
Right.
So I think because that was kind of like a new meteorological discovery, like they naturally, that people do, they, you know, inflate that idea big time, you know, because Blade Runner came out right when that idea was becoming, you know, smog.
Smog had been around a long, long time before that.
But I think he's right about...
It wasn't starting to affect people. Like, you were starting to get news reports in the 80s of people actually getting heart attacks.
Maybe you mean the 70s, but your point is correct that it wasn't until the 80s that people were finally like,
yeah,
we need to clean this.
Maybe the smog
is
causing me to have an asthma attack.
And that's where the air in Los Angeles was making the paint on your car peel.
Right.
And they're like, that might be bad. We're breathing that.
There's one starry night in Blade Runner, one scene of clear skies, and that's when Rutger Hauer is descending the elevator after having killed Terrell.
Really?
You see the stars there, and that's the only time. Yep.
Hmm. Well, that's because the only clear sky is in Terrell's pyramid. Whenever they're at the top of the pyramid, you know, and in fact, the one time you get to see sunlight in Blade Runner, Harrison Ford goes, it's too bright in here.
Yeah.
And, you know, the concept is that at some point, Los Angeles becomes just smog covered, and it's like Venus. All the heat stays in, rains all the time, and to the point where people have like glow in the dark umbrellas.
What
and
was
I saw one of those for sale online.
Well,
you
Venus on Earth.
So you've been there. You're like, just like Venus.
He owns property.
Don't
if
you?
Someone would try to say,
"There's no Google Venus." You're in trouble.
Google Venus would be a very short-lived venture.
Actually, I'm
Google
leading Google Venus.
Google would make it work.
We are there. And we have to get it all photographed before Tony buys it up, or Anthony buys it up and wants to, you know, charge us for looking at it.
Yeah, what's killing me is Tony, I never did find out what exactly your favorite sci-fi movie is.
It's 2001.
No, Day of the Earth Stood Still. You didn't say that?
I'm sorry.
No, that was
Day of the Earth Stood Still.
Okay,
is mine.
Okay.
2001 is Tony. That's as far as we got.
Now that was quantifying it to the hard sci-fi. Yeah. If it's the more popcorn sci-fi, I'm going to say Serenity.
That's a big
You know what? I'm saying Serenity over anything Star Wars.
Episode 70. Here we
go. That's the trendy thing to say these days.
Well, Star Wars isn't, as somebody said, not science fiction.
It's a kid movie.
It's
a kid movie.
It's fantasy, yeah.
Fiction.
I'll qualify the statement with as
my favorite noir.
As an adult,
same.
As an adult, Serenity is more fulfilling to me than Star Wars is.
Unless you
but Star Wars is a kid's movie.
You know what? I think you can really consider Serenity fantasy then, too.
It's definitely
it's a lot more science fiction than Star Wars. I mean, actually,
I'm give you a Western over sci-fi.
What River Tam flipping shit and killing 100,000 people is hard sci-fi.
Hey, okay. Have you ever seen her? Man, that chick is scary.
She's scary.
The psychic stuff that they did was the only fantasy. Was the fantasy.
That was fantasy. Okay, all right.
But leaving Earth on generation ships that, and it took them, you know, eons to travel through the stars because they didn't use faster than light. They established that the star system that they're in is a densely compacted star system where there are a bunch of planets in a relatively close space that they don't necessarily need to travel between travel between systems to get to other planets. That's a lot more science fiction than a lot of stuff is.
No one is arguing that Star Wars is anywhere close to hard sci-fi.
Back to the Future wouldn't be considered sci-fi.
It counts as sci-fi, sure.
I'd say it's sci-fi.
It's super fast and loose sci-fi.
Yeah.
It's comedy.
Yeah, but it's romance.
I mean, some people argue that if you get to things that are that theoretical physics haven't got to that point yet, then it's fantasy. You know, so for some people, if you put time travel in a story, if you put faster than light technology into a story, automatically fantasy. But see, that's automatically fantasy.
Theoretical science. Like, I don't know about how you felt about that, but all the movies that I watched as a kid, sci-fi was considered movies that covered a subject that had not been.
Like what?
Star Trek, one of the famous sci-fi TV
fantasy.
Shows. Right. See, I grew up thinking, though, in a world where the fantastical science was considered sci-fi. Like, regular sci-fi. I mean, I think in general, because I grew up in the 80s and 90s, that fantastical sci-fi was the essence of sci-fi in those two decades.
I don't think you saw the rise of actual sci-fi TV shows until Stargate SG-1 took the air. I said it.
I wasn't into it.
Argue with me.
Like, I'm saying on a regular consumer basic level.
I've never seen
it. Yeah, I was going to say, it's hard to argue with the back half of sci-fi's original programming.
Well, Babylon 5.
Played at 9 p.m. on Friday or whatever.
I will accept your Babylon 5 argument. But I will counter with, it was a terrible show.
I disagree. The first season of Babylon 5 sucked ass.
I can't justify...
Two through four...
I can't justify 23 episodes to get to the good stuff.
Not to mention Twilight Zone and The Outer Limits. A lot of that was very hard sci-fi.
Oh, yeah.
Twilight Zone skipped all around, though.
Yeah.
Some episodes were not even futuristic.
Like half and half, and it was, it was a story-by-story thing.
Oh, absolutely. But, I mean, it was science fiction.
Well, we've been watching that new thing on NBC, Fear Itself. It's an hour long, and it's supposed to be horror on mainstream television. But, and yes, okay, yeah, and you know what? I did the same thing. We've seen three episodes of it, two of them not so good. One of them was... I predicted the ending because I've seen that. I had seen enough Twilight Zone to know where they were going to go with it, but they were really going for a Twilight Zone kind of thing, and it worked.
Doctor Who. Let me take back what I said. Doctor Who is sci-fi.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm not going to let you argue.
Doctor Who's fantasy.
Oh, I don't like it.
For its time, though?
Yeah.
Okay, for its time, what decade are we talking about?
Every version.
It's time.
Every version. It's
popular television's history.
Every version of Doctor Who is fantasy.
So I want to kind of bring up a tangential movie that's related to Blade Runner, but not really only thematic.
You feel the need to announce a tangent on this show?
So you just want to bring up a movie.
Well, he actually wanted to bring up Blade Runner because we haven't actually spoken about it in about 10 minutes.
That's how we roll around here.
One of my other favorite sci-fis, and it was... A lot of people didn't like it when it came out, but I feel it's another one that just gets better than it with age. Is I think AI is a great film,
terrible.
And it in Pinocchio. A lot of ways shares. It is Pinocchio,
mm-hmm.
but it shares a kind of cousin ship to the themes that are in Blade Runner.
There are some.
And,
yeah.
And
I enjoyed AI.
I hated it.
It was Pinocchio.
Yeah,
well, I could see that, you know, 5 minutes
they
in.
They even directly referenced.
Oh, they, you know, yeah. The Blue Fairy.
A number of times.
When they throw down the Blue Fairy, it's like, oh, wait a minute. I didn't get the other four references to Pinocchio that you had to throw that one in.
Yeah, it's not only Pinocchio, it's Disney's Pinocchio.
Yeah, it is.
Or wonders if he's real or, you know, all this sort of thing.
Yeah, it's Spielberg's Disney's Pinocchio.
The story just rambles on and on and on and doesn't end and doesn't end and still doesn't end, and then aliens.
Well, it was based on a Kubrick
concept.
And then the aliens are because of Spielberg.
And bring this guy back.
Probably.
Yeah,
this guy's leaving town. You want to be
yeah.
quick.
Son of a...
That's true. I'm going to Mizzou Law for the next 3 years.
Oh, yeah? Cool. Mm-hmm. I go to law school.
Mizzou Law. Oh.
Good times. What kind of law do you want to practice?
I have no idea. I want to litigate somehow, some way, but that's a distant dream for any young lawyer.
He's going
to
prosecute Excellent. Anyone that says AI is a good
that's
movie.
That's right.
Hey, you can take my Google Earth theory. You can go to town with
that. I can go to town with that. I would be the...
He's going
to
be doing IP protection for us really soon.
I have a feeling when Google...
We're going to need
that's
all the lawyers...
That's a great idea. Come work for
We're
us.
We're going to need all the lawyers that are tangentially...
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
As if we don't have one upstairs and then two in law school in process.
Well, I'm going to go off on a cotangent here, and I'm going to say that I think that...
God, I hated cotangent.
You
it was the worst of the...
You can't allow... you can't allow the rules of the internet privacy invasion to really have any, bearing on, you know, the real world privacy. Like, I think what you were bringing up about, you know, how you can't, you know what I'm saying, take pictures of people's property, I think...
I'm not saying you can't.
What? Where are you going?
This is definitely one.
You need. You either need one fewer or one more beer.
I think I need one
Let's
more.
Let's get one more since we can't reverse osmosis alcohol out of his system.
Okay, what I'm basically trying to say is that I think.
Cosine divided by sine?
I think you can't litigate for internet invasion of privacy because it's a whole other world than.
Okay.
And you're going to create a Blade Runner society, dude.
When's the Blade Runner MMO coming
everywhere.
Out?
I hope it doesn't.
No. I think I need one more beer. But,
I think you do.
I didn't go anywhere with that, did I?
Not really.
Not really.
Well, that's why I said cotangent. It wasn't a tangent. It wasn't in the circle either.
Cosine of that
MS.
I'm
all
with
you.
You
know?
You were there. Fuzzy math.
Well,
it's all right.
Well, science fiction. Here we go.
Art sci-fi is fuzzy math.
I gotta ask, are we going anywhere else with you? Because I want to go gamble.
Yeah, I want to go gamble too.
I think we're good.
All right.
Swind.
All right, so...
End that podcast on my dumb statement.
No, we're going to end it on Adam and I bitching about how
we
want to leave. Yeah.
And I like to say this podcast has been dedicated to my wife, Colleen, and she will be providing snacks the next time I'm on. So
excellent.
Maybe you'll invite me back.
We need to have another large crew when that happens so that half the table can be eating while the other half's talking.
She may actually be feeding us.
Question.
Ooh.
Does anybody like
raising your
contact?
Hand? Raising your hand does not help in an audio podcast.
Hey, I want to go game.
I've only seen Contact once, very long ago, but I do remember liking it
because that's a good.
I like Contact too.
Yeah.
James Woods, I dig.
I think we could all come back together maybe for something like that.
Matthew McConaughey, not so much, but we can talk about that later.
All right, we're gonna call this one done. See you next week for The Reckoning. You guys want to say goodnight or what?
Not
bye.
Goodnight.
Peace out.
Bye, Den's wife, Colleen.